sun comes out, splashes on the floor. When we came rolling out from breakfast this morning, I heard a sound that wasn't a usual sound. It was a cheep. And there were toys out there on the driveway. And I thought, oh, it's over. They know it's over. There were birds all over, breaking their fast, their very long fast. I thought of them often during these last few days. It's really hard when everything is blowing like that and it's so wet. And some people don't make it. It's too hard. How fortunate we were the whole time. We could just slip in and out of it and really appreciate shelter. Boy, you feel it when you don't have it. And then you get it again. Oh, thank you, thank you. This is so good. Well, I was going to talk about compassion. I was thinking about it a lot. It's sort of our basic subject. And living life of practice here in Compassion Light Temple, it seems like an important subject to bring up. It's called Compassion Light Temple. That's what the Ko is light. G-Ko. G is temple, the second G. So G, compassion, Ko, light. Mysterious light. And that big poster that Coven did, the big black poster with the white drawing on it, the calligraphy, mysterious light. That's part of it. But we ourselves are light. Buddha's last words were, be your own light. They were wanting him to tell them what to do, tell them what to be. You're going away. We won't see you anymore. Well, how can we keep going? But in fact, we're always keeping going. They were always keeping going. He wasn't running them. He wasn't the engine of them. Nobody is the engine of us. No great wise person can be an engine for us. Or a light for us. Except as inspiration. But the inspiration means to breathe in. To be inspired is to be breathed in. And so it's to step back and discover our own light. Our own vividness. How it is that we burn. sometimes it seems like, often it seems like compassion is a kind of sweet thing. It sounds like it's sort of warm and kindly, and it's being nice, the way we were all taught to be nice as children. Just be nice, dear. And of course, that's a part of it. But the essential part is not a being of any kind. It's an action. Zen practice and Buddhist studies are full of ideas and helpful notions about what this means to do this. There are many theories about, and many stories, wonderful stories to illustrate the theories about how this is. But if it's just stories, it's really meaningless. If it's just ideas, even if it's ideas about being nice, it's meaningless. We live in a rough world. It's always been a rough world. Whether we were living in the time of Neanderthal or now, it's pretty much the same. It's tough and strange, and our minds are full of strange things, beautiful things, mysterious things. It takes a tremendous amount of deep attention to awaken to our own mind and to discover how to enact the compassion that is constantly inviting us. We want to know what to do. Our doing is the outreach and the help. It can also mean the inreach and the help, because we ourselves need a great deal of compassion. And we ourselves can be the best way of providing it. It's wonderful when someone helps us along. It's essential. It's how we live together. We're Avalokiteshvara for each other. But if we're not Avalokiteshvara for ourselves, we're kind of lost. Then we're always depending on others and not taking care of ourselves at the same time. And it's complicated. I learned it so deeply here at Jikoji when we first moved here and had so many strange things happening. So many amazing and strange people living here, most of whom thought that we had no right to be here, that only God owned the land, that people couldn't own property, and so we should just leave everybody alone and we should go away. It was very difficult. And since this group of people had just been kicked out by the sheriff, evicted from a piece of property down the road a little bit, and had come here as a kind of refuge, the first instinct is to say, well, let's kick the bums out. They don't belong here. They're just elbowing their way in, and they're dangerous and strange people, and we don't want to know them. And Komen said, we should invite them in to sit. We should invite them all in to sit. And I thought, oh, good Lord, how can we do this? And we did it. We did it right here. This was the Zendo then, too. We took all the books out of the library and made a Zendo right here. And not everybody came, but a good number of people came. Vets, Vietnam vets, runaway kids, homeless people. Quite a variety. And all lost in some way. And of course, if you get intimate with a situation like that, you realize that you yourself are lost as well. That we're all lost in some way. And that the essential action for us is compassion for each other. That to accept and invite in, even though it feels very dangerous, it is dangerous. In some ways, it's physically dangerous, but that's the minor thing. The major danger is that it is a challenge to our self-view, our view of ourself as a person. We often keep people and things at a distance so that we can maintain this image, maintain this person we think we are. We have to keep everybody out there. We don't want them to see us too closely because they might see through and see who we really are. Which is, we really don't know. It's something different all the time. Always something interesting. So developing an active mind of compassion is very different from that sweetness and light that we think of with it. And it requires a tremendous amount of patience and a tremendous amount of selflessness. And it requires a sangha of some kind. Some kind of situation in which we all can agree to help each other. In this society now, it is very hard to find sangha of this, of any kind, much less a kind where there's room for compassionate action. I think our challenge as members of a great society, great meaning huge, is to find ways of engaging and contacting, touching and being touched. One of the things that Zazen gives us is the ability to know ourselves well enough that we can be touched. without feeling like we're being lost or in terrible danger, and that we're available to reach out and touch others, even though we don't know what they might do. Some of us have projects in which we're trying very hard to do just those kinds of things, finding ways to engage and embody and enact the Dharma. The many statues of Avalokiteshvara with the many hands and arms. Some say the hands have eyes. So whatever is happening in the world can be seen. Or they're holding many different kinds of instruments, a hoe and a spoon and a scalpel and a telephone, anything, whatever is needed. Or the little Taras who don't sit in our posture of sitting. They sit with one foot out, ready to hear someone calling for help and ready to leap up and go and help. So we're always thinking about in our practice, how do I take this home? We sit in this truly wonderful place, in this atmosphere of real peace, and the kind of quiet that we long for. And yet we go home, most of us, to chaos and fearful happenings. And it's very hard to know what to do or how to think about it. Because everyone is talking about it now, the situation that we're in. We are so fortunate we have a practice. We are on a way. Enacting a way. And we're not going to fix anything. But we can fix what's before us and make that our practice. To acknowledge and accept what's before us as it is. You know, they say the last problem before enlightenment is comparing oneself with others. It's interesting, isn't it? And aren't we always in that process? Either feeling better than somebody or worse than somebody. Always looking up or looking down. So the most compassionate practice is simply to look straight forward. Look at things as they are. Not the way we think they are, not the way we want them to be, but how they are. And use our best discernment. We don't stop thinking in Zen. We don't stop using our brain. We use it with reason. And we really, really look and really, really listen. So I think I'm thinking this and saying this because I've been so impressed with this Sesshin and how this is happening here. How already the living of it that I've just been describing is how you all have been doing this Sesshin. It doesn't always happen that way. But I wanted to make it conscious. This is a wonderful example of how. And I encourage you to be inspired by it when you go back, as we say. It isn't another world we're going back to. It's the same thing. But perhaps with this knowledge and this deepening understanding that we've developed during this time of sitting, that this will help us and help the world. So that's what I brought to say today. Very happy to see Eric here.
No, the reason why I came here today, I've been avoiding coming to lectures for quite a long time.
Yes.
Because back at Haiku Zendo, I could never understand the lectures. And I asked Colton about that. And he said, oh, it's not necessary to do that. Just sit. But, you know, I kind of, you know, I try to remember things that you say, you know, and I can't remember them. And it's really difficult. And so I went over, I've been taking care of Jenna a lot. And I said to Jenna, you know, I expressed her my concern about this coming to the talk today. I wasn't going to come. And she said, go listen to the Noble Angie. And don't try to remember anything. Just let it all come in. So here I am. Thank you very much for speaking and for smiling.
I'm honored. I'm very honored. Thank you, Eric. Thank Jana.
Sort of imagine all of the, you know, practice and I was listening to something on the radio after Mr. T's executive order. There was a refugee who had been in a camp the entire time Jikoji had been here, and this was the day he was going to come to the United States, and it just sort of, the contrast of Jikoji versus somebody being in a refugee camp for, it's almost unimaginable how long that is. But I don't, it's more something that sort of makes me take, be grateful, you know, for what I do have.
Yeah.
But that's a long time.
It is a long time. In a lifetime, it's what, two-thirds of it, or
you're lucky, yeah.
Three-quarters, yeah. It was a big bunch of my life, yeah, many years.
35. One more.
Since we began.
Well, since Jikoji became Jikoji, and then all those other things that you mentioned all happened before that.
Ah, yes.
Maybe 40.
Right. Right.
Curious how you define compassion, because when I came to Zen, I guess I kind of had an idea that compassion was feeling sorry for people who were inferior.
Oh, yeah. Right. Saving all sentient beings.
But then it was elsewhere as empathy without being attached, so you really didn't have that. But now I believe that compassion is the whole point. Mm-hmm. But we often don't know what it is, and the day after we're done here, I'm going to be in San Antonio, and so. And I have a feeling that it's meeting these people,
yes,
who are my friends.
Yes.
But how? What's compassion?
It's being willing to leap forward rather than hold back. It's to reach out and to speak up and to be true to your own self, rather than putting an extra face on yourself. To just be thoroughly straightforward and honest so that people can feel safe with you. Compassion is allowing people to feel safe with you. We're all scared of each other, you know. All through life, we're all scared of each other. And we don't want to say too much. And it's all kind of fraught a lot of the time. Even when we get close to people, we don't get very close, because something bad might happen. But usually the bad might happen that we are afraid of is that we'll lose our sense of ourself as somebody important, as somebody special. Sharon?
I just want to add a small thing for our hard-working Eno. And just to be careful with the word compassion, because compassion, as we are used to using it in English, is a very different, I wish we were using a different word in Buddhism. It's a completely different thought and idea. So if you're finding a contradiction, or you're talking to somebody who doesn't know anything about Buddhism, about compassion, you won't be talking about the same thing. So just to be aware of that. And I like the Buddhist way much better.
Mikhail?
I have a question. What's the way, or is there a way to cultivate compassion through meditation? So my point being is that I didn't start meditating to get more compassionate, to be more compassionate. It was a personal gain, right?
Yes, of course.
It's good for my life. It makes me better, blah, blah, blah. Me.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's a practice that I have to do to specifically cultivate compassion, or is it something that it's growing as I am developing, and it just comes with the practice. So, anything specific, or it just arrives?
Well, it's in our nature, and if you study very young children, you see it already happening. Very young children just naturally are generous. If you ask them for something, they'll just give it to you. and then we get this crusty thing over us. But as we sit, the crust just falls away naturally. And so if you have a sitting practice and you just devote your life to that, that in itself is compassionate. That will help you feel the connection that there is already. We feel separate, but we're not separate at all. And the more we feel the connection, the actual connection, and it's the connection with, you know, the floor and the seat that you're sitting on and the ground underneath, and everything is all, there's nothing separate. So the more we feel that as we sit, as we breathe, the less we feel the need to be somebody in particular, somebody special, and just to be breathing with everything and being with everything. So the tight grasping sense of trying to be is loosened up by itself. Already it loosens up. You notice it just in sitting. And we become more easily touched. We become more open to each other. So sitting practice itself is the practice of compassion. It's our how to do.
Today in Dokusan, I said to you that I felt a separation, not a joining, of my own self and of the Dharma. And that the Dharma has been close, but I've had something, I've been in my private, secret compartment. That's me. And I've always felt Dharma's close to that, but there's still, and I don't know who that person is. And I don't know if I ever really will know who that person is, but I think I will start to tolerate and even embrace all the ways in which I miss myself, in the sense of the word. And I feel that that's probably how we are with each other as well. Mm-hmm. And that really, maybe that's why we're not so special, and that's why it's such a relief. Because we are just like everybody else, and we can have the curiosity and the intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me that's maybe has been the hardest, is to, I don't know if I've shown anybody what's in that private cupboard, much less me. And I feel that is the seat of compassion. And without knowing that, I don't know how compassionate I can ever be. This will always be that. Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I just have this notion that that's true.
Seems to me there we are many different people. And that's one of them. We probably all have a secret cupboard where we never show what's in there. And we put a different face on for different folks and different situations. You know, we go into a highfalutin social thing and we, you know, lift the teacup and lift our little finger or something the way we were taught. And if we're out in the bush somewhere, we're doing something else, you know, we're stomping around in our boots and being that kind of person. So I think we just need, we just recognize all these different aspects. They're aspects of this mystery that we call me. So that's one of them. That's the mystery in the mystery, you could say.
The enigma wrapped within a riddle wrapped within a
riddle. Yes, yes, one of those. I should mention that the other temple that Koban founded in America is called Hokoji, which is Wisdom Light Temple. So in Buddhist studies, you always learn that wisdom and compassion are just two aspects of one untalkaboutable mess, that they go together, that they are the same, different ways of being the same thing. So they talk about idiot compassion, which is just going out there and taking off all your clothes and giving them away, like St. Francis did, and emptying your refrigerator and ending up with nothing, and taking on the world in a way that is unrealistic because you're not taking care of yourself. Or there's the kind of wisdom that is so harsh and cold and precise and correct that even though it's absolutely right, is wrong because it has no compassion in it. So that those notions are helpful sometimes. You have to keep your wits about you as a compassionate being. You can't just go out there and be a doormat or, you know, give away all your money. Chogyam Trungpa said we should make a lot of money. We should all get big jobs and make lots and lots of money and build big houses so that people can see how great Buddhism is. Those Buddhists, they really know how to live. So there are lots of ways of doing this thing. Brie?
I'm curious about finding that balance. You know, I have two friends right now. One is in Mill Valley and one is on the east coast of Canada. And I'm not really close friends with either of them, but they kind of happened into my life at a time when they're both in a space of really high need. And I'm really worried about, you know, their health. You know, one of them has been kind of ousted by the medical system, and she's just dealing with so much medically, and she doesn't have the money, you know, to get care that she needs, you know. And the same thing, this kind of poverty that is happening for the other one who has chronic illnesses, and there's like a desire to help, but I also don't have a lot of money. And what do you do? Because, you know, when I'm in interaction with them, they're both so kind of in this desperate place. You know?
Sometimes we can't do anything. I mean, often we can't do anything. A friend of mine, as I left to come up here, was it looked like he was dying. And he was in the hospital, and I think he must have died while I was here. And I've thought the whole time, there was nothing I could have done. And his goose was cooked already, and we knew it. So it was just a matter of it being the time for it. And it happens that way so many times when we're helpless. And it's a very sorry feeling. And I think we can just forgive ourselves for not being able to save the world. Saving all sentient beings means one at a time, not everybody all at once. So we can't meet the needs of everybody. We can help. And we can pray for them. No, we can find ways of encouraging them in any way that we can think of to try to support them. Just your caring is a big support.
Thank you. How do we as Zen practitioners pray for them? And that word, pray for them. When we put cards on the altar when somebody's ill, and dedicate our bow, our frustration, or our zazen, is that the Zen translation of pray for them?
Oh gosh, I don't know what the Zen translation is. I have no idea.
Do you pray as Christian Scientists pray? In prayer in that sense, is that exactly zazen?
I'm not sure. I'm not that sure about Christian Science prayer. I was exposed to some of it, but not enough to know. Is it? I mean, you know.
It is just the same.
It's the same.
Yeah.
So it's an offering, actually, or a service. Or a surrender to something much, much, much greater than we are. Yeah. And it's helpful to people to know that you care in that way. Sometimes if people are in trouble and I can't do anything, I'll tell them that I'll offer some incense for them. And boy, does that make a difference for people. They really respond to that in a way that is tremendously helpful. To me and to them, both. It's something we can do. And the doing, the action, is always the trick for us, not the thought.
Things came to mind from your talk. One was, there's the saying by Jiddu Krishnamurti. He said, you are the world. And one of the things that one of my old teachers, he used to emphasize and point to was how that the nature of human experience is ultimately impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
And that we tend to personalize our experience, and that's kind of the general movement of ego. It's constantly personalizing what's fundamentally an impersonal experience.
Yes.
And so if we really see that the nature of every aspect of our experience is fundamentally impersonal, then you can see that it's like, well, we're all sharing a similar experience with similar pain and struggle and dukkha. And boy, I'm sympathetic to all of you who suffer through what I suffer through.
So. And we're all suffering.
Yeah. One question I have, you don't have to have, I'm not expecting a big enlightened discourse or something, but it's more of just like your opinion about the role of Zen in social justice. It's a kind of a big kind of hot button issue, even in on Zen forums online, where people feel like, hey, don't talk politics, yes. Don't talk about microaggressions, don't talk about biases and anyways, the list goes on.
Yes.
I on one forum, I remember this kid was saying, it's like, Black Lives Matter, they have nothing really to do with our movement, the Buddhist movement, whatever that is. And, it's like, I don't think our ultimately our goals really align. And I thought that was totally silly, but anyways, I'd be interested to hear what your opinion is on it. I don't know if you're ever, were you involved in like social justice stuff in the 60s or anything?
No, I wasn't. I was raising children.
Okay.
I figured that was my donation to the society. Three sons, right?
Did you get a medal?
No. I got a lot of pain and suffering. I've thought about this a lot because it's so up in everybody's mind now. And I just don't talk about any of it in specific terms in the Zendo. I just think there are so many other issues that we are learning in Zazen and finding ways of taking on that address it more directly, more intimately, that it's not necessary to take on the fate of society at the same time. I just don't see the point in that. I can see how people are doing that. And there are big questions about Soto Zen now and what Soto Zen is doing. But Soto Zen took on the Japanese side of the war,
right.
And Katagiri Roshi was trained as a kamikaze pilot. I mean, I think you really have to be careful about messing around with the impersonal side of things too much.
What do you mean by impersonal side?
The side of the great, I think of it as a big animal, that big, slow, stupid animal that is
society.
Moving as people in society, and some of it is doing riots in big cities, and some of it is building great tall buildings, and some of it is, it's all this huge thing that's slowly moving, and it's all corporate. It's all called corporations. So it's, I think it's beyond us in a way. I think it's beyond our consideration in a way. That our effect is way more profound than anything to do with that.
Which effect? Are the effect of
Our practice.
Of our practice.
Of having a practice and doing and being a practice.
So, I guess, then is that part of what you're saying is like kind of like separating what's happening kind of externally in society a little bit, because it's this big, slow-moving mess. And there's the importance of what we're doing here, which is kind of arguably very difficult in its own right, So, when it comes to compassion, though, you could say, like, one argument would be, hey, we have to get involved. People's lives kind of at stake. Their human rights are at stake. It could be gay rights. It could be, women's rights.
Sure.
So it's kind of like, obviously, we, like you were saying, we don't want to keep our compassion our sense of compassion, all these like theoretical, you know, like the theoretical compassion that I could have, you know,
right,
being active in the world and doing things to actively try to improve people's lives. And I know that, you know, I know it's also, it's like, it's touchy because you don't want to offend people on either side,
yes,
of things, right? I understand that's
right,
like, that's very sensitive because we want to be unified in our practice together.
Yes.
Be divided,
you right,
know, in those opinions and things. You know, so anyways, I guess like my question is like, you're saying like the world out there is not some other world, you know, that we're returning back to, it's this world. So how should we see that, hey, well, what I'm doing here, it should be seamless with, you know, having compassion and being involved. What do you think being involved would be in the right way?
Well, I think there are plenty of places where you can feed hungry children and vote for, you know, what seems like the right way, and do all of those social action things, but not call it Zen practice. Mm. I think it's a different thing. And that to get it mixed up with Zen practice is misleading. It's misleading people about what we're doing. I don't think we're doing that. And what you say is exactly right. I don't know who voted for Trump and who voted for Hillary in my sanghas. Mm-hmm. And I don't ask. Mm. And I don't talk about it because it just is so contentious.
Right.
Everything around us is so contentious. And I think, if anything, we can bring some sort of harmony into every situation just by accepting both sides as they are. And then doing whatever it takes to do what we can. But we can't do an awful lot.
Mm. If we want to end it, we can. I could ask you more questions about what you thought, but... The question remains is like, well, when does that line, like, where should we respect the line? It's kind of like you're saying, like, it's almost like the separation of church and state. It's like we want to make the Sangha a bit of a haven for people, right? And kind of to be able to leave the problems of the world outside of it.
No, I'm not saying that. I think we can't do that.
Okay.
There's no way to do that. It's
right.
Just finding ways to be in the world with its problems without being caught up, snagged by it. Not being identified with it.
Right. Okay.
Not identifying oneself as part of the contention that's going on.
But do you feel that we have to take sides at some point?
I think we naturally do, unless we're very careful.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a group of Zen teachers, and one of them said right after the election, she said, I certainly hope somebody will assassinate Trump.
Yeah.
I thought, Jesus Christ, what is this?
That happened
all about?
To myself too, and I was like, shh.
Yeah. Oh. So.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we really, really have to watch out. There are all these hooks. It's all about hooks.
But you are in favor of being involved.
Well, I am, of course.
Okay.
Of course. I
but
have...
So you're just like not taking a position of attachment to...
To a side.
To a side.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that's not exactly right either. Not getting caught up in the quarrel.
In the quarrel. Mm-hmm.
Not letting it be a quarrel. Standing up for what's right, for sure. I think that's the most important thing, is to stand up for what's right.
So,
and
right.
Certainly not go
more of like the inner quarrel, you know, and get caught up in that, because obviously to stand up for what's right means sometimes putting ourselves in harm's way. Or
well, it does mean putting ourselves in harm's way, but it doesn't mean, I guess I'm talking about taking sides. Mm-hmm. And engaging in the kind of kerfluffle that goes on in politics, and especially what's happening now when everything is so misdirected, you could say. Hmm. So we can't deal with the misdirection in our own way, but we can certainly be straightforward in our own to maintain our intention. The intention that brings us to the cushion. So,
I feel a bit, just to clarify, I feel like part of what you're saying is like not to get ourselves lost in kind of the duality of sides.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it's kind of like not losing our center.
Yes.
In the midst of it.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
And not making a big political one more party, for instance, a Zen party or something, and now we are going to...
Three groups on Facebook that are like Zen social justice, Zen peacemakers, Zen...
Yeah.
And I don't think it's all bad. It's not a political party, but I don't think it's all bad. I think, you know, it's a good discussion that I think, you know, it's valuable.
Yes.
Anyways.
Yes. Well, it's a real good question because it's our world. And how we navigate it is important. And ignoring it is a mistake, you know, for sure. But getting too caught up in it is also, in my book, is a mistake also.
Right. For me, I guess like one of the conundrums about this idea that Buddha, our practice is separate from, you know, it's like some little haven. There's something about it that doesn't feel right.
Yes.
Because it's like, well, I don't look at it as like, you know, this separate thing I do from the rest of my life.
It's not separate.
Know, yeah, it's not separate from anything. You can take the word Zen, Buddhism out of it. It's just life.
Yes.
You know? And so that's why it's like, it seems weird to think of it as the separate thing. But of course, I can appreciate the political need to make a haven of, you know, the Zendo, you know, and kind of the sensitive position you might be in if you do have opinions about things, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Anyways, right. It's tricky.
It's tricky. It's tricky, but life is tricky. It's always that way, one way or the other. Yeah. Thank you, though. It's a very important issue. I think one that we're all wrestling with. What do we do? What do we do? Yeah. Thank you, Paul. Sharon?
Well, I'm not going to answer the what do we do part. But during your conversation there, I just reminded me of someone I knew way back a very long time ago who was actually my roommate. Who never told me that about his Buddhist practice. I didn't have any clue until, because we knew each other because we both worked in a group where a lot of the people who worked there were these really politically active and everybody should be and da-da-da-da, you know, and criticized him a lot for not being, just being a Buddhist and doing that, and that was useless. And so he never talked to me about it, so I didn't know about it, and I didn't know him really that well until... And actually, it was because of something he said to me once when I was having some problems that made me think, oh, maybe I'll try that. So I've been thinking about Jikoji while you were talking also, and thinking about how a lot of people come through here. You know, some people for a day, some people for a week, some people live here for a few years. And we all, I know we're not supposed to say gain, but we're all formed somewhat by this practice. And how we are in the world is affected by this practice, even though we might not call it that. And so I don't think it's really correct to say that Soto Zen or whatever is not involved in world affairs, mm-hmm. because people who've come through here, they, you know, may or may not be involved in world affairs. And so maybe while I'm here, I'm not talking about world affairs. But in my life, I think my life and how I see things and people is affected by this. And I don't know how to say it, but something like that.
Yeah.
Well, you could say we are our world in entirety. And if we have a practice and pass through a place like this, that this is part of that vast world of which we are a part, all the way to the edges of the universe. So,
well, that's more esoteric.
Well, no, that's true. Yeah. That's not esoteric.
No, I didn't say that's not true. I'm just saying it's, but it's looking at it from a little more esoteric.
It's just a bigger distance. It's stepping back a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
But I don't
it
think
does
that
affect.
The criticism that Soto Zen is not involved in that is correct.
Well, you're right. It does.
That's what I was looking at.
If people are. If this is available for people, then mm-hmm. it certainly has an effect. Yeah. And that's the whole point, actually. That's why we did it in the first place.
I like how we fly under radar.
Yes.
We fly under radar.
Under the radar?
Yeah. I take it that's how I could be mistaken, but I feel that's Copen's way.
That was his suggestion, that we all act like guerrilla warriors.
That's true.
You know, sneaking around in the bushes rather than.
Because the minute I tell somebody, you know, are you Buddhist? Well.
Yeah. We're not Buddhist. We're not Buddhist. No, there's not Zen and Buddhism are all made up words for something that we don't have to call ourselves Buddhist. The only time I call myself a Buddhist is when I fill out the form in the hospital. I want somebody there if I'm dying.
You might get better food that way, too.
Well, maybe so, like on the airplane. Nico?
The first time I heard you speak at the Wednesday night group and at the uh-huh. house, you said that same thing, that the only time you call yourself a Buddhist is when you fill out a form at the hospital. In the back of my mind, I've always wanted to take this opportunity, like a chance like this, to ask you what you meant by that. And it's very cool that you just kind of repeated the same thing that has been echoing for however many months it's been. So that was, just wanted to say that.
And here it is.
But what do you mean by that? Do you not consider yourself a Buddhist?
It just creates a sense of separation. As soon as you just say something like that, then you're not other people.
So all other things being equal, would you say the same thing about not being a Christian or a Jew?
Yes, uh-huh. I would.
Right.
For one thing, they're all different depending on who you're talking to. And so they're very vague terms. And they just create, I mean, people fight wars over terms like that.
Yes, yes. I find that whenever somebody asks me, am I a this or that, like, yeah. am I a feminist, am I my answer is, well, it depends on who's asking me what.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Someone who's going to be perhaps offended by an affirmative answer, and I'm in the mood to, you know, then I'll say yes.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's someone who might be hoping I would say yes,
yeah,
I might want to cut it a little bit more finely and say, well, maybe I'm not.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yes.
That you brought that up again. So.
Yes. Thank you. And that gives us a way to pull the rug out from under from people, and that's very helpful.
You're so nice to them.
That's very helpful, yes. Very compassionate. Well, it's after time, folks. We should sit a little bit more before supper.